before we get to the podcast, I wanted to invite you to the Pipeline Conference. The theme of this year's conference will be succession at every level. The event will be held October 11 through 13 here in Nashville, Tennessee. The focus of this event will be succession all the way from senior leadership at a church to the preschool and even the parking volunteers. That means that this conference is for your whole leadership team and any volunteers who you'd like to join you. Our speakers will include John Piper, Bob Russell, H.B. Charles, Tom Rayner, and more. Again, this event is October 11 through 13 here in Nashville. We will have separate coaching days on October 11 and 13, with the main event being the 12th. These days provide your team a chance to get focused, engaged training from our team. We have early bird discounts running through July 31st, so there's still time to take advantage of these, along with our fantastic group rates if you want to bring your team. Go to myleadershippipeline.com to learn more about the event and to register your team. Again, that's myleadershippipeline.com, and don't forget to take advantage of our early bird and group discounts before July 31st.
Welcome to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. My name is Daniel Im, the Director of Church Multiplication at Lifeway. I'm here with Todd Atkins.
that was a week what?
It was.
I just got off a flight, man.
You've been awake for many hours and it's not even lunch yet.
2:30 Eastern when I got up.
What time did you go to bed, though?
I don't know.
Somebody somewhere is playing a really small violin.
Yeah,
and come on.
That third voice is Aaron Coe joining us from Passion, the Passion Movement.
He's already established that.
I'm not letting you get away with anything, Todd.
I know. At least I've got Daniel here. He's,
somewhat sympathetic.
He's nice. He's mm-hmm. Canadian.
We'll make it run. We'll get going. We'll get from point A to B.
That's what we'll do.
Despite all the rabbits we'll hunt and get down.
Marcus would just fillet me.
Yep.
That's his job. Daniel's nice.
Well, Aaron served at the North American Mission Board for about 5 years, really helping it become church planting wise much of what it is today before he initiated that in New York with Send New York. And it was neat to hear your story this morning about the collegiate ministry, but just the way that you were looking and pioneering churches, planting churches. And it's neat to see how that's evolved and continued to develop at the North American Mission Board. And a couple of years ago, you joined Passion, you joined Louis Giglio and really came, I don't know your title, but it kind of sounded like
look, everywhere he goes, he's like the black hand.
You're the one who starts things.
Yeah, that's right. I like to say I throw the grenade in the room and then let other people pick up the pieces and figure out what to do with it.
There you go.
Yeah, exactly.
That's good. Well, this is going to be a fun time together, and we're going to get going with question number one.
All right. So probably the most important question we ask, in my humble opinion, is who are you currently learning from?
Yeah, my favorite thing right now is another podcast called How I Built This. Guy Raz and the guys at NPR, and they're interviewing every week an entrepreneur and just kind of how they built their company. And sometimes it's, legendary entrepreneurs like Mark Cuban or any of those kind of guys, or most often it's newer voices, so the guys who created, Lyft or the Cliff Bar or— But it's just really amazing to kind of learn from entrepreneurs and what they're doing. And, and all their stories tend to have a few common denominators in common, the biggest of which is perseverance. I think the thing you learn and the thing I'm learning is, and I've known this my whole life, but it's just great to hear others reinforce it, is there's just no such thing as an overnight success. Every one of these guys have hustled to do what they're doing. But what's really cool, too, is that every one of them also met a need that humanity had, and so all of their great ideas were really service based. Like, how can we serve people? And it's not that some of them didn't have, capitalistic visions when they started. I mean, they definitely did. But at the end of the day, all of them, the reason their idea took off is because they were serving a need that human beings had. And it's really cool. So I'm learning a lot. It's a lot of fun to be around that.
Yeah, I love that. That reminds me of the book I'm going through right now, The Upstarts. Yeah. It's talking about Uber and Airbnb and Lyft and all their
Airbnb
stories.
Airbnb is one of the best stories. I mean, they're one of the interviews on How I Built This. And, it's just amazing. I mean, basically the idea was you got all these conventions coming into your town and people are needing places to stay. And it literally was a bed and breakfast on air mattresses, you know, in these guys' living room. And that's where the whole idea started. Mm-hmm. And I am a proud Airbnb-er today. I'm so glad they started it, but it's really amazing how, you know, what its genesis was.
There's another similar thing with cars now called Turo.
Okay.
T-U-R-O. And the cool thing is, if you
not sponsored by,
because I can't vouch for them.
Yeah,
but I know that you can basically, for what you would rent a car at Hertz, you know, you can basically, if you're in Southern California and you want a convertible, you just rent somebody's 1986 Mercedes or, you know, something completely random.
Yeah,
but everybody lists their cars on there. And they come and pick it up.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, there's ones like that where it's like a membership. So you can just like you can be a, have a membership to a flying club and, you know, share the three planes. You can do a membership to luxury cars.
Yeah. Well, I think that's one of the things, you know, as I observe kind of where we are in America, especially. But I think it's a global thing is, you know, the gig economy has allowed us to take the assets we already have and just keep them moving, you know, and I think that's. You know, Atlanta, we're in just this, you know, crazy time right now where the city is booming, but we've got all these problems with infrastructure and, you know, traffic is horrible. And, you know, I think a way forward for Atlanta right now is, you know, is things like Uber. You know, they just
that's their vision. Yeah. I mean, that's if you read Upstarts, that's what you'll find very quickly. I mean, he wants a world without cars.
Yeah.
Yet he uses.
Well, let's just take what we already have and just keep it moving because, you know, one of the biggest problems with cars is not the car, it's the parking of the car. And that's what takes up so much space. And the car ends up sitting 96% of the time. Well, let's keep the car we have moving and it doesn't have to occupy a parking space, which, you know, in a urban environment is one of the most expensive things you can pay for.
So, that's awesome. That's awesome. Now, Aaron, you said you're the guy who throws the grenades, right? And I can imagine what it looks like to throw the grenade, walk out, or even because I know you don't just throw and leave, but you're part of it.
Right.
You're part of these upstarts, right? You're a part of these starting new things, and then eventually you hand it off. And in the course of that, as you've done that over and over again and in your leadership, what types of obstacles have you faced, are you facing right now?
I think the obstacle is not in the starting. You know, I think you can start a lot of things. I think the obstacle is figuring out the sustainability and then the handoff of that, you know, and who's going to run it the long term. And, you know, sometimes you face obstacles on the front end of just, you know, people don't, you know, they don't know that they need what you're about to do or they're, you know, we haven't done it that way before. And you have those sort of things. To me, that's the fun part, though, is just kind of overcoming all that on the front end. But I think the real obstacle and the real thing you have to figure out when you start something is, you know, what is the sustainability look like and who's going to come in and run this thing. And so, you know, I would never pull out of anything until we knew that plan, you know. And so, like, for instance, at Passion right now, I mean, we are starting churches. And the first church that we started is a location of Passion City in Atlanta in the kind of the northwest part of the city. And that was one of the first projects I worked on. And, you know, just a few months ago, we brought in a location pastor as a guy had been on our team for a long, long time. And but, you know, we made that transition. But in making that transition, that's the real key is the handoff there, just to make sure balls don't get dropped and that things are able to keep on moving smoothly.
What's that look like? Like give a practical.
Yeah, I don't think there's a formula. It's just a lot of conversation and a lot of just, you know, walking through. And I think for me, what it looked like was handing over leadership to this guy day one and me trying to get out of the way as fast as
possible.
You're
starting the handoff process as you begin your process as well?
Right.
And renovating it?
Yeah. And the handoff was, hey, you know, this is yours to lead now. but I'm not, I don't want to leave you high and dry. So, but I need you to come to me and gotcha. Tell me what you still want me to do as we make this transition. Because I think if it works the other way, then my tendency is going to want to be to stay involved and get involved in the weeds when I don't really need to be. He as the leader needs to do all that and make all those decisions. And so, you know, it was a fun process just figure that out really for the first time in our organization, you know, as to what that looked like. But again, the principle was, the new designated leader needs to lead from day one. And I, as the, you know, the entrepreneur or the catalyst, need to get out of the way, but yet still maintain a position to serve him until he's, you know, firing on all cylinders.
What I love about that is position enough right. when you're handing it off, if you don't give him authority as well to make right. the decisions, I mean, it's, you're not empowering the individual. Right. So right. I love how you've given them the ability to lead by making decisions right. and you're there not right. to say, hey, high, dry, you know, you're gone, but you're there to support yeah. them.
Well, and I think too, succession is not an event.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right.
You know, it there is a transfer that takes place. It should be a relationship.
Yeah.
And so it's important, you know, not just to, if I haven't already said it on the podcast, you'll probably hear it a lot because it's a thing that I say a ton now. Because I'm thinking about succession so much,
because of our upcoming conference, yeah, because you're leaving.
Not because I'm leaving. Sorry.
Yeah.
No, it's because Pipeline this year the theme is succession.
Yeah.
And so what I'm trying to give people is a proper view of succession. It's reproduction. It's not about replacement. But so many times we think of succession as an event. No, when done properly, it's all about reproduction. Because right. I don't care whether you're talking about the senior pastor in a church or the preschool director, when that person leaves, there needs to be, unless you've got someone to succeed that person, there's going to be a time of upheaval, chaos, that's right. transition.
That's right.
So it's just important to have succession at every level of the church. It's vital to have succession at every
level. I think that's the key point there, because you know typically succession happens really badly. It's either and it's usually a cut and dry type of succession. You know, leader A leaves, there's a void, that's what you were just yeah. talking about, and then we go out and try to find leader B, and he comes into a chaotic crazy situation at best,
because whenever you have that void, whenever there's a vacuum in leadership, the person with the loudest voice or the clearest vision is the one who's right. seen as a leader, and they're already going in a direction yep. the new leader may not.
Yeah, and I think growing organizations always have a continuity of leadership. And if you've got the same people in charge of the same things, you know, after 5 years, then you're probably not a growing organization. You know, there's got to be constant move on your team. And so I think you really got to develop a category or a culture where, you know, don't get insecure about the role you have right now and what that says about what we think about you. Because if we're going to grow and reach people, then I would hope that your role is going to shift over time. Because yeah. if it doesn't, then we've probably got larger,
and that's a sign of development.
That's right.
Yeah. Awesome.
Well, okay. So question three.
All right.
What do you have to do every day? What are two or three things that you're like, I must do every day if I'm going to lead well?
You know, for me, it's just put one foot in front of the other every day and not have a predetermined expectation on what today is going to bring. You know, I think for me, a natural tendency would be for me to control the outcomes of every situation I go into every day. But I think the more open-handed I go into whatever the day may bring, and then, you know, react accordingly, then I'm able to understand that, you know, God has more in store for me today than I could ever wake up in the morning imagining, you know. But if I were to walk into meetings, with an open-handed, open mind, you know, then he's going to put me in places that I never imagined that I could be in. And he's going to take those conversations to places I never imagined they would go. So for me, that's what I mean by putting one foot in front of the other. It's just walk in open-handed without a predetermined destination in mind. And so I think for me, that's at a philosophical level, that's one thing that's got to happen every day. And it's something I'm learning more and more. You know, at a practical level, like I got to get my kids on the bus at 7:30 every morning. Yep. You know, I mean, that's one thing I've got to do. And to me, though, that's a priority. Like, so it's on my calendar every day, because my tendency would be to fill up every moment, waking moment, with business, with stuff, with projects. And for me, I just make sure that, you know, key times, you know, for my family or, you know, that's just in the calendar. So, you know, if you schedule a breakfast with me, it's not going to be before 7:30, you know, it's going to be at 7:45 or later, because that time from 6:30 in the morning till we get on the bus, that's, you know, we're, that's what we're doing. We're doing family stuff. Yeah. And then of course the evening, same type of thing. But for me, talk about the two or three things. I mean, that's prioritizing family and just realizing that the natural flow of life is going to edge out the things that are your highest priorities. Mm-hmm. And for me, I found that, you know, the way to keep those things priorities is to just make sure that I, you know, put guardrails around them.
Well, and that's important. I think I'm glad you followed that up, because some people may have thought you just kind of, well, you just, sounds like he just gets up and the day is wide open. He does.
No,
but there's
no
a plan in place.
No, there's a plan.
You're just saying it's you're open-minded as you're walking through.
Yeah, no, there are meetings on the schedule. There are things that have to get done. But
you're not walking in with a prescription to those things, though.
But that, yeah, I think it's the prescription and it's the control. You know, where I'm trying to determine the outcome versus walking in realizing I think I know what I want the outcome to be.
Okay.
But
so you're still walking in prepared.
Yeah.
Because you've thought through it.
Yeah. So thanks for bringing out the clarity there. It's not that you're, you know, you're just loose and just kind of hoping things fall into place. I probably should have given a little context. My natural state is to try to control outcomes to be in charge of those outcomes. You'll have to explain, because it all kind of all depends on what test you take.
ENTJ?
On the disc, I am a
DI.
Off the chart D.
Yeah, you're an ENTJ.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm calling it right here.
Yeah.
You agree?
Yeah, I mean, you're the MBTI guy.
No, well, you are too.
I'm a strengths guy.
Tell us what a strength finder is, then, Daniel.
Yeah.
Do you know your strengths?
There's 32 of those. That's a little harder.
34.
A little harder.
34.
There's 34, Todd.
I'll get there someday.
Yeah.
I'd say activator.
Do you know
activator is one of them.
Activator, woo.
Oh, you do have activator. Okay.
Yeah, definitely activator. I can't. It's been a little while, but yeah, activator. Yes, maximizer. Woo is one.
Strategic.
Futuristic.
I think that's right. I think strategic and futuristic.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
We did not know. That was not scripted.
Yeah.
That's good.
But, you know, you meet guys like us around the table. I mean, we were all kind of similar, but that's what I mean.
We're all kind of nerdy. So.
Yeah. My natural would be to walk in and try to prescribe, like, hey, what are we going to get out of this today? But for me, one of the things I'm learning is okay, yeah, I have a plan. Definitely have a plan. Mm-hmm. But I think it's God wants to meet us in the middle of that plan, because his plans are immeasurably more, and it's going to be a thing where he gets the glory. He's not going to get any glory out of anything that I control, but he's going to get the glory out of taking the gifts that he's given me and then putting me in situations where he then has to come through. And I think that's what I mean. Just kind of open-handed, one foot in front of the other. And again, just being okay with outcomes that God brings.
That's a great balance, because in a sense, we can handle a couple of variables, maybe a few, maybe four when we're doing strategic planning, but the Lord knows all the variables.
That's right.
Right. So be prepared as you can. But
he's just going to bring people. And I think sometimes he'll bring people into conversations that you're not expecting to be in the conversation.
Yeah.
And if you're so prescribed in where you want the conversation to go, you'll just kind of immediately say, well, I'm going to ignore that new voice over there, when that new voice may be the thing that opens up a pathway that
you have to diagnose before you prescribe.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Now our next question is about leadership in your home. And I like how you shared, hey, every morning until 7:30, you're going to get your kids on the bus. And you said you protect that time in the evening as well. So spending that time, protecting that time is definitely something you've shared, but what are other ways that you lead in your home?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I hope, I hope we're, you know, figuring that. We've got four kids.
How old are they?
They are 10, 8, 7, and 4.
All right.
And two of our kids are adopted from New York during our time when we lived up there.
Awesome.
I mean, I think at an overall principle, my wife and I mean, we're trying to figure out how to lead with grace, you know, and again, kind of going back to the former question just about controlling everything. I mean, I think you do the same, you carry the same thing into your family life. And you try to, you know, manipulate your kids. You can try to manipulate your kids to do what you want them to do. Realizing though that God has wired this child to be something. He's wired them in their image. And my job as a parent is to shepherd that.
Yeah.
And to try to put them in situations to bring out who they are. But if I'm trying to control my child according to what I think they ought to be, then they may miss who God's wired them to be. And so my wife and I are just daily trying to figure out like who are our kids, you know, and who has God wired them to be, and then to turn them loose. Like my oldest son is taken after his dad and is an entrepreneur. And so he's got a business plan, and it's got, you know, there's a, I think somewhere near 100 business ideas, you know, everything from, you know, lemonade stand during the, you know, the festival in the park to, you know, party planner, like he's a birthday party planner.
This is awesome.
And it's pretty amazing. And he's hired his 7-year-old brother as a partner. And his sister, who is 8, she is not a partner. She's on contract just to do marketing because he doesn't want her sharing in the profits. But what's funny is that
savvy.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Savage.
He's going for it, you know, and we're trying not to get in his way. So, I mean, he's, you know, we live near one of the biggest parks in Atlanta. And so whenever there's a festival, he's setting up right in front of our house, got the lemonade stand going. There was a, you know, our 4-year-old little girl was invited to a birthday party. So the 10-year-old went to the mom of the other 4-year-old and said, listen, I'll come and keep all the other kids entertained while the 4-year-olds have the party. And the mom paid him to do that, you know?
Wow.
And so it's just kind of recognizing that this is kind of who your kid is and trying to put them in situations. Our daughter, our 8-year-old daughter, she's an athlete, you know? And so just trying to put her in environment. So we by no stretch have it all figured out, but we are trying to figure out like just what this grace-based parenting looks like and trying to, again, just not predetermine the outcomes for our kids.
Yeah. That's great. You know, how about your wife?
What's that?
In terms of how you lead her and cultivate that marriage.
I think same thing, you know, I mean, it's not having a predetermined plan for her either. And, you know, again, I think we always ebb and flow between grace and control, you know, and I think God's called us to live on the grace side of that equation. And so my wife and I are wired very similarly, you know, and so we're both just in our natural, like we're just hard charging, going for it. And, you know, our youngest daughter just turned 4 and will go to pre-K next year. And my wife's always had a dream to help young couples figure out how to live in the city. And, you know, it's very expensive and whatever. Yeah. And so, you know, so back in August, just a few months ago, I encouraged her, go get your real estate license and figure out, you know, how to build a business that helps people, you know, jump into the city and learn how to live in the city. And so she did that and ended up partnering up with, you know, one of Atlanta's top real estate agents and who has the same vision, you know, how do we help young couples live in the city? It all is kind of rooted in a gospel, you know, foundation and what they're trying to see do. And so, you know, I just said, go for it, you know, and again, we don't have a perfect marriage. And sometimes in the context of, you know, a few minutes of a podcast, it can sound like you've got it all put together. We don't. But at the same time, we're trying to just recognize who God's wired us to be and, you know, shepherd and lead accordingly.
I appreciate that honesty.
Yeah. All right. So obviously you have a history with passion, with working with thousands upon thousands of young adults. What would you tell your 20-year-old self about preparing to lead?
Yeah, I think I'd tell my 20-year-old self just to take risks and to not fear. I think fear is, you know, the enemy of gospel advancement, you know, and again, fear is, you know, ultimately comes from, you know, the enemy of this world, but fear just creeps in at all levels, and fear usually manifests itself as, well, I'm just going to adapt to the status quo and try to make the most of the status quo because that's really what's expected of me. And I know as long as I stay within the status quo guardrails, then I'm going to be safe. Mm. Versus what I think God calls all of us to do, regardless of our wiring, is to follow him, which isn't safe. And I think, so for my 20-year-old self, though, you know, I've always had an entrepreneurial bent. There's always been times in my life, though, where I've played within the guardrails because I knew that's what it was safe. It wasn't just because I was a rule keeper. It was because I know this is safe. I know that there's an income that comes from this. I know that these people will be happy with me if I stay here, you know, whatever the case may be. But it doesn't mean that that always meant that that's what God was asking me to do or calling me to do. And I, you know, had to learn, continuing to learn how to just get over the fear of the approval of man, and follow what God's asked me to do. Now, there's a wisdom to that. You know, it's not like you just, you know, go for it and don't pay attention to what other people are telling you, because obviously we know there's there's wisdom in the counsel of many. So we get that. But at the same time, I think when you get that counsel, sometimes that counsel leads you to take bold steps. And so I think I'd tell my 20-year-old self to take those bold steps and to seek counsel early and then just follow Jesus wherever he wants to take you and just go for it. So, yeah, don't wait for permission. I mean, I think I'd tell my 20-year-old self, don't wait for somebody else to tell you that, hey, what you're about to do is okay. Yes, seek counsel, get input from people, but don't always expect even the people closest to you to get exactly what it is that you're going to do, because chances are it hasn't been done before if it's a really great idea. And so don't expect everybody to understand it fully. And I would just launch out of that. I think the natural default for most human beings is that you play it safe within the guardrails. Yeah. Even the most adventurous of us, we'll edge right up to the guardrail, and that we feel like that's like, innovation out there. But, chances are innovation's on the other side of the guardrail.
Yeah. What I love about that is when you do that, it goes back to your initial advice here to not fear. Right. And that's why I love John 14:27, where Jesus says, "Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. I do not give as the world gives. So do not let your hearts be troubled or afraid."
You close that out very pastorally.
Well, I'm a pastor, so.
I never have done that.
It's the difference, bruh.
Amazing.
Well, thanks for being on with us, Aaron.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And you guys, thanks for listening. If you would, please go on to iTunes and leave us a rating and review.
Thank you for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Don't forget to visit myleadershippipeline.com to learn more about our fall conference, October 11 through 13 here in Nashville, and to take advantage of our early bird and group discounts. Again, that's myleadershippipeline.com, and the early bird deadline is July 31st, so move quickly to take advantage of these discounts.